This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
Welcome to Sexology, a podcast that untangles the science of sex and pleasure. And now, with this week's episode, your host, clinical psychologist, Dr. Nazanin Moali.
Welcome back to another episode of the Sexology podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nazanin Moali. And today we're diving into the topic that many of you guys ask us to talk about, and that is GLP-1s medication. These drugs are everywhere right now, mostly framed around weight loss. But what are they doing to men's sexual health? Can improving vascular health actually improve erections? If obesity and diabetes are major contributors to erectile dysfunction, could GLP-1 medications address the root cause instead of just treating symptoms like Viagra does? And what do we make of reports from some men who say they've lost interest not just in food, but in sex too? Is that healthier reward regulation? Or are we accidentally dialing down the brain's pleasure systems? To unpack all of this, I'm joined by Dr. Taylor Cohn, assistant professor in the Scott Department of Urology at Baylor College of Medicine. He trained at the Johns Hopkins Brady Urological Institute and now leads a growing clinical and research program focused on male infertility and sexual dysfunction. This is a new on science-grounded conversation about erections, desire, metabolic health, and what doctors should really be telling men. Let's dive in. But before we continue, I want to talk about something incredibly common that doesn't get discussed enough, and that is premature ejaculation. PE affects about 1 in 3 men at some point in their lives. And here's what's important. It's subjective. It simply means ejaculating sooner than you want and feeling some distress about it. For one man, that might mean 30 seconds. For another, it might mean 10 minutes, but wishing it were longer. The key is control and confidence. That's where Steady Freddy comes in. It's a delay spray designed to help men last longer and feel more in control without numbing the experience for their partner. And interestingly, many of their orders come from women buying this on behalf of their partners. Think of it as a gift for you and your relationship. If you want to try it, you can get 15% off with the code sexology at steadyfreddy.com/sexology. And of course, always read the label and follow directions for use. If lasting longer and feeling more confident in bed has been on your mind, this could be a simple place to start. All right, let's dive into today's conversation. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Sexology Podcast. I am so excited to welcome Dr. Taylor Cohn to our show. Dr. Cohn, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for taking the time to do this interview. We got so many questions about people being curious about GLP-1, its impact on their sexual performance. I know you've done research on it. Can you tell us a little bit about your research on this topic?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago when GLP-1 receptor agonist really kind of started to explode in popularity, we wanted to look and kind of see what kind of an impact is this having on the development of erectile dysfunction in men. And so we used a large claims database, which allowed us to sample a large portion of individuals. We specifically were looking at people who were young men who had no diabetes, since diabetes can be a confounder for erectile dysfunction. We wanted to see, did these men, when they started, say, a GLP-1 receptor agonist, have increased risk of sexual side effects? Because we had seen one or two patients come into the clinic saying, oh, you know, we're having some issues. And so what we found was actually very promising. Although when we compared it to a group of men who were not on GLP-1 receptor agonists, we found that the overall rate of anyone coming in with an erectile dysfunction was very low, about 1%. It was slightly higher than the group without GLP-1s, but even at that, we were very reassured that the GLP-1s were not causing a major sexual side effect for many of these individuals.
That's very reassuring to hear, because we also, I am a psychologist and sex therapist, and I hear people having some struggles. So I was wondering if it's more of a global issue or individual cases. And the people who had the issues, do you think it was related somehow to the GLP-1 consumption or like use of it, or there were other confounding factors?
So the way we set up the study was basically we included people who had previously never been on any erectile dysfunction medications and had never had a diagnosis of erectile dysfunction. So for these individuals, this would have been the first time that they would have had this type of diagnosis. And we did this within 1 year of starting the GLP-1 receptor agonist. And so for us, you know, again, it's completely association. We can't, you know, necessarily say that this was causation, but, you know, we did see that this was something that was, you know, some very small proportion of individuals did have pretty soon after starting their GLP-1 medications.
One thing that we often hear, this connection between health of your arteries and your erectile functioning. And oftentimes, even we hear that people say, when if you have an erectile issue, it's often sign of a bigger issue with cardiovascular system. Do you think there is benefit for people to use GLP-1 in order to improve their sexual health?
I think that it's a huge question and a huge potential within this field. So many of the arteries that are within the penis that are responsible for kind of erectile function are some of the smallest arteries in the body. And so lots of times these, when you kind of have a cardiovascular issue, these are sometimes the first arteries that are affected and can kind of be a harbinger of, you know, further cardiovascular disease down the line. In several of the GLP-1 studies that have looked at kind of this microvasculature, there's actually been some pretty encouraging things. They've looked at kind of microvasculature associated with kidney disease. And they've actually found in a large randomized controlled trial, a GLP-1 use actually prevents the decline of kidney function in people with, say, chronic kidney disease. So, you know, there's no yet long-term studies yet looking at erectile dysfunction and GLP-1s, but certainly the theory behind it would be, could this be a preventative mechanism to help kind of maintain that microvasculature that is so important for erectile dysfunction,
Absolutely, and it can be so profound that if that would be the solution. And I wonder, similar to other weight loss tools, some people may misuse it, as I'm sure you've seen people of all sizes. What's your thoughts on that? What would be some downside of someone taking it when they're not a candidate?
You know, I think when you kind of look at it, you know, there's many folks who you know are trying these GLP-1s, and you know, one of the very important things kind of in this is that not only are you going to lose, say, you know, body fat with this, but you'll actually lose about 30% of your skeletal muscle mass. And so, you know, anytime that we're putting somebody on, say, a GLP-1, you know, we are very careful to make sure that, you know, they know to do certain exercises and kind of, you know, protein intake to be able to kind of maintain that muscle mass. But certainly that's always one of the things that we're a little bit concerned about is, you know, you may be losing some body fat, but you're also losing muscle mass. And in the wrong individual, you know, that can be, you know, lead to, you know, loss of balance, you know, kind of loss of muscle mass. And, you know, that muscle is fairly important for hormone regulation. And so you kind of worry a little bit about the misuse in that regard.
You brought up the topic of hormone regulation. And I interestingly heard a lot of my clients talking about loss of desire. Like they talked about that when they went on GLP-1 medication, they no longer feel desire. It's a pattern that you also notice. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I would say of the folks that we've seen, and again, it's not very many people who come to us as urologists, kind of after starting GLP-1s, having these issues. Again, it's just a small handful that we've seen. But it is exactly what you described. It's more of a desire than just a physical, my penis doesn't work type of a impact. And, you know, I'd be very interested to hear what kind of your experience has been. But for the most part, a lot of this has kind of been a temporary thing where people kind of will initially kind of have a loss of libido or desire to have sex. And then after that, you know, it tends to come back a little bit later down the line. You know, what exactly is kind of driving that is certainly up to debate. A couple of people were like, well, I'm just so nauseous all the time that I just have no desire to have sex at this point in time. So I don't know how much of that's kind of, you know, playing into it. But certainly those seem to be the complaints that I've heard as well, where it's kind of a loss of libido, not necessarily, oh, you know, I can't get the same erection that I used to.
What I'm curious about is like when I hear people talking about low desire, I wonder if it's something related to their reward system, right? Like that's getting modified and therefore like they're no longer interested in food, they're no longer interested in sex. As a psychologist and sex therapist, I see people shorter term. So I have not seen things shifting, but also with improving health and changing your body, that can increase confidence. And that can also impact people's self-image and kind of sexual kind of feeling of desirability. So it all can be very connected. For people who have erectile challenges, like if someone's coming in for erectile unpredictability to you, what would be the path of exploring different options when it comes to treatment? Because sometimes I hear very young individuals in 20s, they start taking PDE5 inhibitors and they're just so young for it. So I'm kind of curious, what is the trajectory that you often envision for your clients?
Yeah. So, you know, anytime someone comes in, whether they're 20 years old or 40, 50, 60s, you know, it's kind of a multi kind of modal approach, kind of that diagnostic. First, we want to make sure that they have an adequate amount of testosterone, because if the testosterone is too low, you know, kind of that natural mechanism doesn't work for achieving erections, you know. But we also want to kind of assess the psychologic, right? You know, is there something that's kind of, you know, in their mind that's kind of holding them up, that's causing them to have worry? We also look at anxiety. You know, a lot of these young guys are, you know, under a lot of stress at work or at home. And so for them, that can also be a big player in it. You know, and then if we suspect some type of underlying microvascular or vascular issue, then we can get essentially a penile ultrasound to kind of assess and make sure that there is, you know, normal blood flow and exit from the penis. And so that kind of guides out our kind of initial workup. But we kind of say this, you know, a man is as good as his last erection. So if his last erection wasn't very good, he's not going to be very confident in his next erection. So sometimes you can actually just break the cycle by giving them, you know, a PDE5 inhibitor, and then they're more confident. And then the next time they're like, oh, well, maybe only take half. And then it's like, well, maybe only take a quarter type of a thing. And a lot of times that's kind of the confidence that they need to kind of get back to having normal erections. But, you know, we are seeing more and more young men, you know, in their 20s who have low testosterone, and we have to then, you know, interact on that.
That is such a great point. And what I wonder when it comes to testosterone, some people tend to be more proactive and they just want to go for an injection. And some people are thinking about changes in lifestyle. But when the testosterone is low, I wonder if changing the diet would be sufficient enough. I have many clients that are adamant that I'm going to change like my diet, I'm going to increase my testosterone. What is reasonable as far as when it comes to holistic approaches with increasing the testosterone level?
Yeah. So, you know, it's honestly, you know, it's our first line. You know, what kind of changes can we make to your lifestyle that we can kind of increase things? So first off, and kind of bringing us back to, you know, our original kind of discussion, is if you are obese, you get a lot of conversion of your testosterone over to estrogen. And so there's been, you know, very good studies that show if you have, you know, a good amount of weight loss, you can actually increase your testosterone by 200, 300 points, which can take you from low to, you know, normal range. And so, you know, that becomes a very important kind of role in all of this, and something that GLP-1s have been hugely important kind of in our practice to be able to help some of these young men. Other men, you know, actually increasing your muscle mass actually increases your testosterone level. So some of these guys, we need to kind of help to be able to optimize their kind of workout regimen to be able so that they're kind of putting more muscle mass on, because then that can actually kind of be a positive feedback mechanism to increase your testosterone level. And then it's other things like making sure that you eat healthy, you know, staying away from like highly processed foods, because all of those things, you know, certainly play a role in all of this as well. But, you know, certainly one of the biggest things is kind of the, you know, the weight training and, you know, optimizing the body fat.
And oftentimes that feels less appealing to people, right? Like people want like very quick solutions. And with lifestyle changes, like it can be very impactful, but it can be slower. So I think being patient, monitoring things can be very, very helpful. And also there is another subcategory of people that they lose erection because the sensitivity becomes less, whether it's aging, whether due to number of different challenges. Is it reversible? What would be the treatment for them?
It's a good question. Certainly the biggest category of these subgroup of men are going to be diabetics, and where they get something called neuropathy, where basically their blood sugars have been so high for so long that they've actually kind of destroyed part of their nerve endings. It's fairly rare for us to see that degree of neuropathy, but it certainly happens. And so unfortunately that one is irreversible. And, you know, and so that's why it's fairly, you know, and we talk to a lot of these guys, a lot of these guys come to us in their 20s, 30s, 40s, haven't seen a primary care doctor, you know, since they were, you know, seeing their pediatrician. And so for a lot of our kind of, you know, process and screening these guys is also to screen them for diabetes. If we can catch that on the earlier side, it's not 15 years later where this has been going without any type of interruption. There is some kind of, the other kind of subcategory for this is, you know, folks who, you know, just maybe have some type of kind of overstimulation. So sometimes we have kind of chronic masturbators who can sometimes have decreased sensation. And that does come back. You kind of have to work with them to kind of, you know, decrease some of the masturbation. Some of that sensation certainly can come back. But, you know, kind of, again, that's kind of part of just one part of kind of the whole picture that you're working with those individuals. And that's when having, say, like a sex therapist becomes hugely important, because, you know, I can only do so much from my end of things, and sex therapists, you know, play a huge role in that regard.
I did not know that there are studies. So it shows that if you engage in lots of like self-stimulation, there's a possibility of losing sensitivity.
I'll say it's very rare. And these are kind of individuals that may be doing, you know, 10 times a day type of thing. But, you know, it can happen. And so for those folks, it kind of becomes a decrease that, you know, stimulation, and then you kind of regain some of that nerve ending potential. Certainly not a high percentage by any means, but, you know, we do occasionally have those individuals.
Absolutely. And I like that you were talking about, like, it's for majority of people, it's completely okay. We are pro. Correct. Pleasure. We're talking about rare cases when people have complication. And it's a good news to see that, like, with changing and modifying your sexual health plan, you will be able to experience heightened pleasure again. The other suggestion that I hear people get is about nitric oxide supplements, like taking it, helping with erection. How much research and evidence we have around that?
You know, it's a good question. I mean, so at the baseline, PDE5 inhibitors increase the nitric oxide in penile tissue, and that can certainly play a large role. To be honest, I've only really kind of started hearing about kind of these nitric oxide supplements in the last couple of months. And, you know, I would say that the research isn't, you know, robust yet on it. You know, certainly there's certain supplements, L-arginine, L-carnitine, that can be helpful, you know, in kind of the nitric oxide pathway. But specifically, you know, what is exactly in kind of these nitric oxide supplements, you know, I've not done a lot of kind of in-depth research into it. And the problem with supplements is everyone has a slightly different combination. And so, you know, I think the data would show that L-arginine and L-carnitine kind of have the strongest evidence of helping with erectile function, but it's not going to be nearly on the level of what a PDE5 inhibitor is able to deliver.
And what I invite people to think about when they're taking supplements or even medication that are not FDA approved, it could include anything, like including a pharmaceutical component. So sometimes people think about, oh, I'm taking like this holistic medication, which in reality, maybe you're taking some level of PDE5 inhibitor without knowing. But it's like, there is just so much misinformation when it comes to performance and erectile predictability that makes it difficult for people to think about what would be the best approach for them. For our listeners that they are hearing this conversation and they want to improve their quality of performance for penis owners, What are some of the suggestions you have for that?
Yeah, I mean, I think many, many things go into kind of your sexual life. And I think, you know, when we look at this, it becomes kind of more about the mood, especially for kind of, you know, men with penises. And it becomes one of these things where, you know, the stress in your life, it's going to be stress that kind of comes into your bedroom. And so, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, we're preaching, you know, decrease, you know, any way you can decrease your stress, get better sleep, you know, eat better type of things. You know, if you're feeling better about yourself as a whole and kind of your self-confidence, the more, you know, you're going to be able to have, you know, better erections. But at the end of the day, if someone isn't having erections, you know, there are doctors who specialize in this, and this is something that we treat quite regularly. And so, you know, I always feel pretty bad for the guy who comes in and like, I've been dealing with this for 10 years and, you know, I never knew that there was even any options. And so, you know, certainly, you know, if it is a problem and you're not having the erections quality and quant, you know, that you want to have, you know, certainly seek help, because that is certainly something where we have lots and lots and lots of options for the treatment of erectile dysfunction. And so just kind of trying to tough it out and kind of, you know, live with it, you know, certainly, you know, can play a huge kind of stress in relationships.
Absolutely. And I love that you highlighted that there are a galaxy of options out there. I feel like people think it's either PDE5 inhibitors, and if it's not as effective, and then they're like, you're out of luck. And even there are surgeries that people do, the implants they do. Is it something that you do in your practice? Do you suggest people to explore that as well?
Yeah. So, you know, with our practice and many urologists who specialize in, you know, sexual health, you know, we offer kind of the full range. And one of the kind of the cooler things that have been more recent in kind of the last couple of years are kind of more the regenerative therapies. So we have like shockwave therapy that kind of can help men with mild erectile dysfunction actually improve kind of their underlying vascular health. You know, for people who are taking PDE5 inhibitors, there's different ways that you can take them to kind of optimize their use. And then, you know, if men no longer respond to that, we do penile injections, where you actually take, you know, pretty strong erectile medications and men inject it directly into their penis. No one particularly likes that idea, but, you know, for men who haven't had a good erection in many years, to suddenly be able to get a really strong and solid erection, you know, they're grateful and more than willing to do it. And then when all of that fails, you know, we do have the penile prostheses. And these are a surgery that we can do to kind of, you know, give men, you know, that ability to have erections. And surprisingly, satisfaction rates are between 80 to 95% with that surgery. So, you know, at the end of the day, when someone comes and sees me, I tell them, we can always get you an erection. It depends on kind of what that invasiveness level is. But, you know, rest assured that, you know, we can still get you an erection, you know, despite whatever, you know, maybe happened. So for that, you know, just kind of that reassurance for men that, hey, you know, this is kind of a ladder where we're going to start here at the bottom and work our way up, and just being able to know like, okay, like at the end of the day, I can have an erection, you know, and that kind of is very reassuring to many men.
And I'm glad you're highlighting that, like the majority of people, if you want to have a hard erection, it's something that you can cultivate, because I've seen people having satisfying experiences with all of these interventions, even with injection. I know many people, as soon as they hear injection, they just get so scared. But
yes,
my understanding is that it's not a huge needle, and most people, they don't mind it when they see the result.
I tell men it's the tiniest needle in the world, so you know they are a little bit rest assured. I make sure I show them the needle itself. And so then they're like, okay, well, maybe I'll try it one time. So, but most end up actually not being, you know, too horrified by that portion of it.
And even for people that they do the surgery, and like I have clients in their 70s and 80s that are very satisfied and they have this confidence. And kind of going back to what you were talking about, the more confidence do you experience, it impacts the quality of sexual experiences. Because unless you have significant physiological issues, big part of what you're experiencing, I would say, is psychological. So it's wonderful to hear there are a range of different options for people. So if you want a firm erection, you'll be able to get one, as you mentioned, that they're just going to be finding a right intervention and finding a right physician. With shockwave, that's actually something I've heard about last few years. What is the course of treatment? Is it few sessions? What do you see as far as the outcome?
Yeah, so the traditional, or not traditional, but kind of the treatment pattern that we've kind of settled on in our community is generally about 6 sessions. So you generally do either 1 session for 6 weeks in a row, or you do kind of 2 sessions kind of in a week and kind of space that out over kind of a 6-week period. But, you know, it's very important kind of to kind of pick the right patient for this intervention. So generally, people have to still be responsive to PDE5 inhibitors. I think if you've kind of gotten to a point where you're no longer responding to those PDE5 inhibitors, kind of whatever damage is done can't necessarily be regenerated. I also think that, you know, it's kind of men with more kind of like mild erectile dysfunction, not necessarily, you know, the real severe. But, you know, people have had, you know, clinically meaningful improvements with shockwave, you know, therapy. And, you know, it is important to kind of note here that there is 2 different types of shockwaves. So there's one called focused shockwave and one called radial shockwave. And the radial shockwave has not been demonstrated to be effective, but focused shockwave has been. So if folks are interested in shockwave therapy, you know, it's important to kind of make that distinction, you know, when they're shopping around to look for focused shockwave therapy, because that's the one that's been proven out over 15 plus randomized controlled trials to be effective. Whereas the radial shockwave is understudied, and those studies that have been done on it are not as promising.
When you say mild erectile dysfunction, what would be the qualification for that?
Yeah. So, you know, generally mild erectile dysfunction is going to be someone who's going to be able to get an erection, but maybe not be able to maintain it in the way that they would like to. You know, oftentimes these are the individuals that, you know, see either like a daily tadalafil or daily, you know, on-demand PDE5 inhibitor are going to be able to give them a pretty good erection. Now, on the technical side of things, many urologists or folks who kind of, you know, deal with this a lot have a questionnaire that's actually pretty able to kind of rank out and score kind of your erectile function. And, you know, that's able to kind of categorize people into mild, moderate, or severe erectile dysfunction. But generally, clinically, it's going to be somebody who can still get some erections, but not necessarily the quality that they want.
That is such a good distinction to have, because that's a challenge of many people in outpatient, that we're able to sustain it or get an erection, but we're not able to sustain it. Well, this was super helpful. I know there's like tons of information out there, especially with GLP-1 inhibitors. And thank you so much for translating some of the findings in the research and your clinical experience. So if people are more curious about learning about your research, your work, what are some of the places they can find you?
Yeah, so I'm a physician at Baylor College of Medicine. And so I have a kind of profile page there that highlights some of my research. You can also find me on Twitter at Taylor or TP Cohn, K-O-H-N, M-D. And that is also a place where I sometimes discuss some of the research that's going on in the area. But yeah, I do a lot of research, and this is always some of the things where we're very interested to kind of see where, you know, the future and what can we do to kind of help men get some directions back.
Well, this is very helpful to know. And thank you for all the wonderful work that you do, Dr. Cohn. And we'll leave a link to your profile and also the resources you mentioned. And hopefully we'll have you in future episodes.
Appreciate it.
As we wrap up, I want to remind you that erections and ejaculation are not just mechanical. They're deeply connected to your nervous system, confidence, health, and communication. If today's conversation made you realize you want more control or stamina, know that this is absolutely something you can improve with the right tools and training. We actually have a full course on erectile control, and you can watch the course, and it teaches you step-by-step techniques for arousal pacing, nervous system regulation, and building confidence in a way that feels empowering, not stressful. You'll find that in the show notes. And also, I want to be transparent. Whenever we partner with a sponsor, I personally test the product. When we tried Steady Freddy, it genuinely made sex significantly longer while still being pleasurable for everyone involved. That balance really matters. Premature ejaculation affects about 1 in 3 men, and it simply means finishing sooner than you like and feeling some distress about it. If lasting longer and feeling more in control is something you're working on, you can get 15% off with code SEXOLOGY at steadyfreddy.com/sexology. And make sure that you're reading the instructions and directions. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Sexology Podcast. Thanks for listening to the Sexology Podcast. For more great content, visit www.sexologypodcast.com. Please be advised that information presented on this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health provider.